Hey, welcome everyone to another episode of the Going VC podcast. I'm JJ.
And I'm Rachel, and we're super excited to bring you all this episode. As a quick reminder, our goal of this podcast, as always, is to discuss a variety of topics as it relates to launching or accelerating your venture capital career. Our guest today is Stephanie Manning-Cohen, an operating partner at Lair Hippo. On today's episode, Stephanie talks about her origin story and pathway into venture, as well as what an operating role is and best practices for how firms can approach building a platform team. She also touches on why she's long New York City and the New York City ecosystem.
Yeah, I thought this was a fantastic episode, especially for anyone interested in learning what goes on at a venture fund outside of writing checks, and for those folks that want to learn about what a platform role is and how it varies across firms. Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us today. So we usually start these questions off with a bit of an introduction to our guest origin story. So I was wondering if you could tell everyone how you got your start in VC, you know, what made you want to start in VC, and how you got to where you are today.
Sure. I'm really excited to be here. Thanks so much for having me. I somewhat fell into VC, but I can give some background on my career journey and how I ended up in both venture and my role now. So today, I'm an operating partner at Lair Hippo. We are an early stage VC firm based in New York, backing entrepreneurs across all categories, usually coming in at the seed stage and investing early and being in founders' corners throughout their entire journey. And prior to Lair Hippo, I was at Workbench, which is an enterprise tech VC fund here in New York. And prior to that, I was at AppNexus, which is where I started my career after graduating from college. I was at AppNexus for 2.5 years. I worked in talent acquisition, specifically campus recruiting. And in campus recruiting, you work across events and marketing and talent and people management and operations. And it was an awesome experience. And obviously, AppNexus was a really successful New York startup. I joined when we were 300 people. We scaled the company to 1,100 in the 2.5 years I was there. And towards the end of my 2.5 years, I didn't know if talent acquisition or campus recruiting was what I wanted to do forever. So I kicked off a career search and was looking for something that was pretty broad, but would allow me to bring the skills that I had learned at AppNexus and use them in my next role, and came across a posting for a community associate role at Workbench. And at the time, I had no idea what a community associate did. I had no idea what Workbench did. I thought they sold workbenches. And actually, while I was there, we got a lot of calls asking if people could place orders for workbenches. So kind of kicked off my VC search then. Learned more about Workbench, understood what VCs did. My only interactions with VCs before that was Ben Horowitz coming to do a fireside chat on his book, The Hard Thing About Hard Things, with our AppNexus CEO, Brian O'Kelly. So learned about a whole new industry, and the community associate role really spoke to me because it was a little bit of a lot. It was events, it was community, it was talent stuff, it was networking stuff, and it really allowed me, I think, to pivot into a role where I could figure out what I wanted to do. So started at Workbench in November 2015 and was there for a year and a half, and got scooped and poached by Lair Hippo to come lead their platform team, and have been here for the last 5.5 years.
Awesome. I love it. Before we dig in here, we'd love to maybe take a step back, and it would be great if you could introduce the audience to a 30,000 foot view. What is the platform role? I think a lot of people, at least most of our listeners, are probably pretty familiar, you know, with some of the other venture roles. They know what a GP is, associate, that sort of thing. But platform is something that we haven't really touched on too much on this podcast. We've had one previous guest who I think also actually worked at Workbench, Ali Felix, but would be great if you could give the audience a sort of 30,000 foot view on what the platform role is and what it touches.
Yes. So I think the one important thing to keep in mind is platform can mean different things at different funds. But I think the 30,000 foot catch-all is platform is anything that's not direct check writing that happens at a fund. So then if we go, I guess, the 10,000 foot view, that can be everything from LPs and investor relations to events, to marketing, to talent and hiring, to business development and corporate development, to community work, to operations. So everything that kind of goes on in a fund that isn't the direct investing work, although platform works very closely with the investment team and in my opinion has to in order to be successful. I think one thing that I always chat with people about is you have typical operating roles within venture firms sometimes. So you may have a marketing partner or talent partner. And those people I find are very functionally aligned and have deep expertise in those certain areas. And at other funds, you have people in these general platform roles, like the role I started in at Workbench or the role that I came into at Lair Hippo, which was a director of platform role that can be all encompassing across all of the different verticals and areas of platform.
Awesome. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Stephanie, thanks for explaining that 30,000 foot and 10,000 foot view. And I want to point out, and you penned a great article in January of 2019 called Paths into Venture Capital, Decoding the Platform Role. It's definitely my go-to resource for anybody who has questions about the role. And I know it's been widely, widely shared around the VC industry, really explaining the platform role and kind of breaking into six key buckets and talks about the skills that folks need to succeed in the role. So we'll definitely reference that in the show notes. But along those lines, could you talk a little bit about kind of the skill set or the ideal background of somebody looking to break into a platform role? Obviously, you had some experience at AppNexus with campus recruiting, and then your path into VC at Workbench and now at LH. But if you could touch on that a little bit, I think that'd be really interesting.
I wish there was a really straightforward answer. And I actually wrote the article because I got the question so often. Someone was interested in pivoting from working at a Fortune 500 to working in venture or a startup or a media company or whatever it may be. And unfortunately, there's not one answer that covers all of it. I think a lot of it is based on, one, are you looking for a general platform role or a function-specific platform role? I think the difference there is for those general roles, whether it's a director of platform, head of network, head of community role, I think the ability to work across all of the different platform areas is really important. I think if you're looking at more of the specific role, for example, Emily on my team is our director of marketing. She has a deep background in PR, crisis communications, and brand stuff. I think that's one of the key differentiators, which is like, what type of role are you looking for? I think the one catch-all that any platform person needs to have is an excitement, passion, and sometimes experience working with founders and the startup community. And that can take shape in so many different past experiences. So whether you led an innovation team within a large organization, or you were a startup operator, or you work for a university innovation area, whatever that may be, I think having that passion, excitement, and experience working within entrepreneurship, startups, and the founder world is really important. But then I think the specific skills will always be dictated by the role that a fund is hiring at any given time. And that, again, can skew toward, we need this jack of all trades who can help us define our platform and figure out what all these things should mean, all the way through to, we have a 10-person marketing team already, and we need someone specifically focused on our founder events. And obviously that skill set looks very different from the type of person who would be a fit for the first role.
Definitely. That makes a lot of sense. I think this is a nice segue into what the platform role can look like at different firms. So it could be a brand new firm who maybe doesn't have anybody in the platform role, and then a larger firm like LH who has, you know, a handful of folks working on the platform team. Could you talk a little bit about how that can vary across firms and kind of how the platform role and responsibilities are dictated, maybe like how LH decided to build out their platform team?
For sure. I can definitely talk about how we decided to build out our platform team. I joined in 2017, and there had been two other people in the role prior to me. I'd say the first person was really focused on network and build products for the platform. The other person was really focused on business development. And I think when I came in, I said, great, products and network and business development are all really important parts of the platform, but they're not the platform itself. And the that chart you were referencing in that Medium article, I like to call it the like a la carte menu of a VC platform, and you can pick and choose what you want as a fund. But when I set out the platform strategy, these were all the buckets that I had listed when we were going to determine what we were going to do within each bucket. And as we did that, a lot of the emphasis was on talent and hiring for our portfolio companies and marketing and brand work for our fund, but also for our portfolio companies, because I think it's important for every fund when they're setting out to hire a platform team to think about, what do you want to be known for? What does your fund actually do? Are you early stage? Are you late stage? Are you sector specific? Are you generalist? Are you geography specific? And I think a lot of that stuff will help dictate the work that you do. And at LairHippo at the time, we were, you know, seed only investors and working with companies at that stage. Finding, hiring, and retaining top talent is top of mind, as it is for a lot of companies at all stages, but really, really critical at those early stages. And helping companies with positioning, content, fundraising announcements was also really critical. So that led us to hire in those two specific areas. So we brought on someone to oversee content and brand that has now evolved into marketing and communications, and someone else to oversee talent that is now evolving into this head of people role at LairHippo. So I think ultimately it comes down to, what are your firm's priorities and does that require additional headcount in those areas to really focus on them? Because one person cannot do everything really well all the time. So it depends how deep you want to go into each of those areas and whether you're ready to dedicate full-time headcount to that.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. Could you talk a little bit about, like, when should a firm be start to consider bringing on a platform role? Do you have any thoughts around, like, when the right time is to build out a platform team?
I think we've seen this trend recently where all firms are hiring for it. And I think some of it is a little bit of FOMO. It's like funds are seeing that all these other funds have this role, so they need to have this role. I do think a prerequisite to hiring in this area is, what do you want out of it, right? Do you want to drive certain value for your portfolio companies? Do you want to build certain things for founders? And understanding, like, what you want that end goal to be, and then backing your way into what kind of role, what profile, what person will be best for these things, rather than just saying, we need a platform person, let's go find someone. I do think part of it is this person coming in and telling you what you need and what you should do and setting that strategy. And I think that is what these people should do. But I don't think there is, like, a certain thing. But I think what we're seeing more so now than ever, and I think it's really apparent in just the sheer size of the VC platform community, is I think platform was definitely a nice to have. And it is in some ways becoming a must have, because I think, you know, GPs and investors are doing what they do best. But in order to scale the support services and resources for founders, you need a real team behind that, because investors are so busy sourcing new deals, working with current portfolio companies one-on-one, that you kind of need that team to support the entire portfolio and community and everything that you want to be known for at the fund.
Expanding on that a little bit, you know, the last few years, we've seen the rise of the solopreneur, a bunch of emerging fund managers where maybe people on the team are part-time or much smaller teams than you would have traditionally expected 5 or 10 years ago. Are there things you think that smaller firms don't have the resources to hire, you know, head of platform or let alone a 2 or 3 person platform team? Are there things you think that smaller funds can do sort of along the way as they build towards that stage? Or do you think it's something where, you know, you really got to give it 110% to do it properly?
I think that it all goes back to what they want to offer their portfolio companies, what they want to be known for, and what they are promising and selling to their portfolio companies. I think some solo GPs do an incredible job of being this one-to-one consultant, thought partner, like in the weeds person for their companies. And I think that really works for them. And they may not need someone in a platform role. So I think it's more about what are their needs and what do they want to do. If they want to become a fund that is hosting a dinner every single month on certain topics and then layering in all these other community events, I think the question becomes, is that doable for a solo GP to be leading fundraising and fund admin stuff and investments and post-investment support and these new events that they want to do too? The answer to that is probably no, unless they never sleep, which I know some folks don't. But
right,
then like it does make sense to bring someone in, but I don't think every fund needs to do everything. And that was actually really interesting feedback that I got from a founder. I think my first week on the job here, I went on a listening tour with a lot of founders in our community. And one founder said, I just wish all the VCs could get together and figure out what everyone wanted to be good at, because it feels like everyone's doing a lot. So I actually don't think that every fund needs to do everything. I do think it's important for funds to think about, what do we want to be known for? What do we want to offer? And what is really important? And I actually think a lot of times solo GPs, the sell is working with that GP, and that cannot be replicated. So I think that if there are folks who have smaller funds who are solo GPs, but they say, hey, we do need someone in this capacity, but we're not really dedicated full-time headcount. I think that there are so many talented individuals who are in grad programs, like getting their MBAs, who are passionate about venture. We have an amazing MBA platform, summer associate, Amanda, who's with us for the summer. And she would be such a value add to a solo GP to intern with during the school year. So I think that is a really interesting route. I'm also mentoring right now with Dorm Room Funds Blueprint Investor Track. And that is a way to help expose individuals to venture. And the platform area has been one that folks are interested in a lot too. And my mentee is going back to her second year at HBS and is looking to intern with a venture fund on the platform side. And she would add a ton of value, whether it was in marketing or community or network stuff, that I think solo GPs can totally tap into that. And then you're seeing a lot of people who have been platform leaders at other funds who are transitioning out of full-time roles and offering consulting services. So I think of a friend of mine, you know, Kristen Ostro. She's actually been doing this for years. She runs Strut Consulting and she only works with venture funds. And I think of a friend who is a former Workbench colleague, Laurel, who went to RRE and is now consulting. So I think that there's also a community of ex-platform people, I guess you could call them, who are doing kind of one-on-one engagements. And I think that's another awesome opportunity for smaller funds or solo GPs who are looking to maybe explore or test some things on the platform side, but don't have the bandwidth or ability to bring on headcount.
Nice. You touched on this a little bit, and I imagine like some of the last two or three questions we talked about, a lot of it is going to depend on what the goals the firm wants to accomplish. But to the point you're just making about the founder was wishing that the VCs could all get together and decide what they want to be good at, how do you think about measuring success in the platform role? And I know, you know, in venture writ large, this is quite a challenge on the investing side, especially in the early stage. You make an investment decision and you don't really know what happens for kind of 6 or 8 years. But just before we move on here, I want to make sure there's nothing we missed on how you think of measuring success.
This has been such an interesting topic for so many years in the platform community. I remember this being a big debate and conversation during one of our VC platform summits when it was a bit of a smaller group. And, you know, one person said, well, VC is such a long game and investors don't measure their success for 5, 7, sometimes 10 years. Why should platform be held to a different standard? We're all working towards the same goal of returning our funds. And I think that's true. And I think that's fair. And then I know that there are people who swing to the complete other side of the pendulum. And it is, I'm tracking every single introduction I'm making and following up with people to see whether this one intro I made led to a sale or if this other intro I made led to a candidate being hired. And I think I fall somewhere in the middle. And we try to measure a lot of this through our end of year survey, which is, you know, for us, we're trying to we want founders to think of us as the best partner for them in early stage companies, and we want to help better the outcomes of our companies. And I ultimately don't think any VC firm or platform team can say, well, that company exited for $1 billion because of this event I hosted or this candidate intro I made. But if you know that along the way, you are being helpful to your founders, you are saving them time, you are giving them resources, you are making intros that they need, that all goes towards their success in small ways, I believe, from the platform perspective. So I think from that, you know, we really rely on our end of year survey to help guide a lot of our feedback and whether we're successful. And, you know, we'll capture, instead of capturing, you know, at the end of every event, capturing event data, at the end of the year, we want to know, what did founders think about our events over the year? Because they might leave one event and say, maybe that wasn't that great, but they go to 5 other events and they thought it was amazing. And if that is their lasting impression for the year, that is really valuable for us. If they feel like they left the year learning something new, meeting something new, driving towards their goals because of their programming or resources or our services, that is a win for us. So I really rely heavily on kind of measuring various success metrics through that end of year survey for our founders.
Nice. That makes a lot of sense. And so next question here, and you know, again, I imagine this is going to vary a lot from firm to firm, but curious to learn how LH handles it. How closely do you guys work with the investment team when you're deciding on what programming resources and all that good stuff to put together for founders? Are you working directly with the founders and the investment team's off in their world sort of doing their own thing? And once a check's been written, they hand them off to you? Or do you guys work more collaboratively? And how do you manage that information flow between your team and the investment team?
We work incredibly closely with the investment team at Lyra Hippo, and it was a big draw and reason for me to join. And this was the case at Workbench as well. And I would really urge anyone joining a platform team to ask this question, which is like, how closely do you work with the investment team and what role do you each play in each other's success? And for us, you know, our platform team technically sits within the investment team, and that we're in every partner meeting, pipeline meeting. We contribute to deal flow when we're seeing interesting companies. We're giving feedback on companies. And I'd say that, you know, the investment team's job, every company at Lyra Hippo works very closely with one of the partners and another investment team member. And it's their job to be, I think, in the nitty-gritty weeds with companies through board meetings, through quarterly updates, through financials, whatever it may be. It's the platform team to have the 30,000 foot view of the entire portfolio and be able to really connect the dots between our whole portfolio, the team, the broader ecosystem, resources that the team and founders need to succeed. So I'd say we work incredibly closely together, and we see that the platform initiatives align really well with what we call like our flywheel of success. And that is, right, like as we think about how we source companies and how we find out about companies and how companies know about us, like a lot of that is our brand and the way we're out there in the market and the way that founders are talking about us because of the experiences they have with our teams. And when we invest in companies, the platform team is there to provide support services to help them scale from seed to series A. That's what the investors are working on with them as well. And as companies kind of move along through their journey with us, as they exit, whether they're selling, going public, whatever it may be, or having to wind down their company even, we're hoping that they've had an excellent experience with us and look to come back for their second company, which we're seeing a lot of right now, which is really exciting. So I think the goals and the initiatives of the platform team just align. They go hand in hand with what investment team members are working on as well. So I think definitely collaborative. And I think it's a really important piece for anyone kind of entering a platform role to dig on when they're interviewing the fund.
Nice. That's awesome. So Rachel, we'll turn it back over to you.
Yeah. So I guess following off of your last point there, Stephanie, I think one thing that's a lot less talked about in VC and folks just might not know much about is in all the different ways that VCs can help their portfolio companies post-investment. I know that's the goal of the platform role, but I think what I'm getting at more is like, how do you all know what portfolio companies need? Is it more checking in on investor updates and seeing what their needs are there? Or what does that kind of communication flow look like? Do you all have regular check-ins? And I'm sure this varies firm to firm. So you can speak, you know, more from the perspective of LH or just your take on platform roles in general across the industry, but really curious to hear your thoughts on that.
I think it's a balance between proactive and reactive. I think that firms need to be proactive in helping founders know what they don't know and helping them come up to speed on all the things that they need to be successful, whether it's services, whether it's discounts, whether it's, you know, intros to other founders or workshops or roundtable discussions or dinners and giving them access to certain people and networks. I think that there is a huge proactive element required in this platform role because founders don't always know what they need. But then I think there is this reactive layer, which is being a point person and being like the epicenter of being able to help answer founders' questions. And what I always say to founders is, we can't be the experts in everything. It is not our job to know the answer to every question, but it is our job to know who has the answer and help get you there. So that's kind of what I mean by like the ultimate dot connector. And then I think in those reactive moments, a lot of it is, are we getting this question enough that this needs to be a proactive piece of what we're doing? And I think a really strong example of that is, I think in the early days, we would get questions about brand firms and, hey, just founded my company, just raised our seed, we're ready to do our brand, our naming, our website, our identity, everything. Who do you recommend? And I think it used to be this just like modge podge of, these people have been good and, you know, we know the folks here and you should talk to them. And now we've turned it into this real systematized offering where when we invest in a company, one of the first questions we say are, what's going on with the brand stuff? Where are you? Have you worked with an agency before? Are you interested in bringing on an agency? Here are all the agents. Here are like the top 10 that we've worked with based on your company, your business model, and the industry that you're in. Here are the five that we really recommend. Here are sample companies that they've worked with throughout the portfolio. Here's pricing that they offer and what we've seen in terms of ranges for different offerings. And here are intros to the direct people who you can work with on that. And that is just this like comprehensive offering that really gets to the bottom of what founders need in what becomes like maybe a 10-minute overview. So I think working on things like that when they are reactive, but they become common enough that it's something that you kind of need to bake into your process and your offerings.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And taking that a step further, would you say that most VCs and folks on platform teams, do they work mostly with the founders themselves? Do you find yourself working with, you know, the leadership team at portfolio companies? How does that kind of work?
I think it really depends on stage. At the seed stage in which we invest at, you know, most often it's a pretty small team. Sometimes it is just the founders. Sometimes it's the founders and one or two other employees. So I would say in the early days, our main point of contact is the founder. I think on the investment side, the main point of contact will always be the founder or CEO. For us, it is originally that person, but then one of the things that we've really tried to lean into is being able to be an offering and a place for those next level reports to the CEO. So whether it is their head of sales or their CTO or their CMO, that we can help those people. And by helping those folks, it's directly helping the company. So I think that's a thing that a lot of VCs have leaned into recently is this functional specific community building, network building, whatever you want to call it, to help founders. Because I think as founders grow and bring on more capital and have more investors on their cap table, they're getting invited to, you know, five times the number of events, 10 times the number of dinners. And actually what would be most helpful to them is if they can give community and access to their executives, help them level up, to help them learn on the job, to help them get access to these types of resources. So I think it's something that a lot of firms have been leaning into.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. So as you've discussed, there's so much that you and your team do and that the platform team does in general. Would be really curious to hear about how you all prioritize your time, maybe talk a little bit about what kind of your day-to-day or week-to-week looks like with managing so many portfolio companies.
I hope someone can tell me how to prioritize because sometimes it feels like the number one thing that's top of mind. I think that no day and no week is ever the same. I think some things are really cyclical. So, you know, right now at Lyra Hippo, we're hiring for a head of people and a principal and an associate. And a lot of my time is being spent on interview processes and decision-making across the firm and understanding, you know, candidates that we have and who we should be hiring and all of those things. Whereas, you know, we have our annual summit coming up in October, and that's something that has taken priority given the timing and it will until the event. So some things are definitely cyclical in nature and some things will rise to the forefront. So I can't say that any day or any week is ever the same. I think they're a mix of, you know, it depends how your role breaks down, but it's a mix of internal work that you're doing, the external work that you're doing, onboarding new founders, meeting with founders, taking a call with a head of marketing, grabbing lunch with another platform person, because those relationships are really important, meeting with someone who is, you know, leaving one of the big tech companies in New York and isn't sure if they want to start their own thing or if they want to go be, you know, a CXO at another startup, and you're trying to help them navigate that, but also hoping that they come to you if they're going to fundraise or come work at one of your portfolio companies. So I do think a lot of it is FaceTime and interactions with other people, which is something I love so much about the job, and different types of people, whether it's your peers at other funds, whether it's startup operators, whether it's founders, whether it's portfolio executives. So I think a lot of it is relationship building across the ecosystem to help drive better results for your portfolio companies.
Definitely. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. I can only imagine all the different areas you get to touch on week to week. Sounds really fun and exciting.
Yeah. No day is ever the same. The job definitely is not boring.
Definitely. Is there anything else you want to touch on when it comes to the platform role, whether it be, you know, any misconceptions about the role for somebody that's just learning about it, maybe wanting to break into the VC space through a platform role or anything along those lines?
I think that something that I always chat with people about who are interested in getting into this VC platform role is, again, and I will say this a million times, is it can mean so many different things at different funds. And I think that you really want to make sure that it's a strategic role and it's something that's valued at a fund and not something that's thought of as back office or administrative, and it feels really core to what they're trying to achieve. And I think that goes back to making sure that platform initiatives and goals are aligned with investment goals, because investing is the core of the business. That is what drives returns. But you want to make sure that platform work is seen as working in parallel with that and helping to drive those results. So I think that is a very important thing to think about. And I think, you know, questions to ask that help get at that is, you know, what role do I play in partner meetings and decision making? And how do decisions get made here? And who sets the strategy for platform? And who decides what we do and don't do? And do I have a budget? So those are all things I definitely encourage people to ask and to think about. And then I think another important thing is growth opportunities. I think a couple years ago, you know, you had people in obviously these like operating partner roles at the bigger funds, whether it was across sales or marketing or talent. But it wasn't very common that at some of these, you know, earlier stage funds that people in these general platform roles moved into partner level roles. And, you know, Brett at First Round was one of the first people to do it. And then you saw Dan at First Mark and, you know, my friend Emily at Female Founders Fund. And it's really amazing to see that people in platform roles are getting that seat at the table or being able to move into those partner level roles. And there isn't just a ceiling at director or VP or head of. So I do think that that's an important thing to kind of dig on as you're interviewing at places or speaking to funds as to what the growth trajectory is.
Yeah, thanks so much for sharing that piece of advice. And curious, do you have any other advice for folks who really want to work their way up to partner role at a firm and be a decision maker? And I will point out as well, there was an Axios report in March of 2021 that said only 14% of women in VC are decision makers. So Stephanie, big kudos to you for making that cut. But obviously, we want to make that percentage a lot larger. So I guess for anyone in general, not just women, but folks who are looking to advance their way and really be a decision maker at a firm, do you have any pieces of advice for them?
I mean, I think, you know, whether you're on the investment team or the platform team, I think proving to be invaluable to the firm in a way that feels authentic to you is the best way to become that person. So whether you're leaning into your deep understanding of the network dynamics or community or people dynamics of a company or a founder, whether you are deeply analytical and understand markets and trends and all of that stuff, whether you have a track record of making bets on people and knowing that, like, who is going to be the best founder. Like, I think leaning into your expertise is the best way to kind of move forward in your career and continue to move upwards. And I think, like, setting yourself up to be an invaluable member and carving out, like, what you want to be known for and what you want to bring to the table is, I think, the best thing to do. And also, I guess, joining a place that will make space for that and wants more decision makers and wants more opinions and wants more feedback. And I think that is something that I have found at Layer Hippo, where, you know, the managing partners want everyone's thoughts and perspectives, actually, no matter what level you're at. So I think vetting the companies and the funds that you're interviewing for that is really critical.
Definitely. Thanks so much for sharing that great piece of advice. JJ, do you want to wrap us up with some of our fun questions here at the end?
Yeah, that sounds great. Thanks, Rachel. Yeah, just in our last few minutes here, would love it to start if you could tell the listeners a little bit more about LH I know you guys are one of the most active investors in New York. The firm is sort of born and bred in New York, and you guys have a focus on early stage investing, but we'd love it if you could just tell the listeners a little more about LH, what sort of stuff gets you excited, and yeah, and then maybe after that, we can move into what gets you excited about New York.
Yeah, of course. So you covered a lot about Lair Hippo. I feel like you took all my boilerplate. Not leaving much.
You're not for you.
In addition, you know, we were founded on this premise that great New York founders were going elsewhere, mostly to the Bay Area, to raise their first institutional round of funding. So we wanted to be New York first and seed first and a founder's first partner. And I think over the years, we are not just a founder's first partner. We want to be their partner throughout the entire journey. We actually say founding a company is a lot like living in New York. You know, you have the highest of highs and lowest of lows, but it's amazing and there's nothing like it. And we just, you know, our team has really built our careers and our networks and our lives here in New York. So we really value founders who emulate that New York energy. And that doesn't mean you need to have your company here. You know, we back founders from all across the country, across all categories. So I think we're just interested in backing like good people who have great ideas that are looking to really, you know, transform industries and categories. And that's why we're generalists. You know, about 40% of the portfolio is B2B and enterprise, and 60% is consumer across digital media and D2C and consumer hardware and consumer software. So, you know, we're really interested in backing just the best people who are looking to build the best companies. And yeah, that's, I'd say, the overview on the team and the fund.
That makes a lot of sense. And I know, you know, the ecosystem in New York has grown a lot over the last few years. And I can't remember whose Twitter account I saw this on, but with the rise of remote work, people are being a lot more intentional about where they're deciding to set up shop. And New York as a city has a ton to offer. So it's going to be exciting to see the ecosystem continue to grow and you guys give San Francisco a run for its money.
Yes, I think I am so long New York and believe that this is one of the best places to build your career, to build your business, build your company. I think that New York is so diverse in the people and industries that we have. I mean, it's like the home and hub to like titans of the world. And I just think it's the energy here is unparalleled. So I am long New York forever. And I think we're seeing a lot of people in this, I guess, post-COVID, although I don't think we're ever going to be out of COVID, this post-COVID world, I guess, you know, if they don't need to be in certain places, are choosing to be in New York because it is such a wonderful place to live and build in. So very bullish on New York. And, you know, there are amazing funds that are being started here, that have been founded here, that have been here for a while. We're seeing a lot of the West Coast funds also serve to set up shop here. So we're seeing, right, the Andreessens of the world open New York offices. And I think that's really a testament to the tech ecosystem and community that has been built here over the last, you know, decade.
100%. Last couple of questions here. We always ask our guests what their favorite recent book was. Although Megan, one of your coworkers who we had on last year, she pivoted that to favorite television show. So I'd say either are fine there.
I don't think I'm ready to share my favorite TV shows because I really lean in the trashy reality TV. That is my guilty pleasure and not something I want my whole work world to know about. So I'm going to go with books and I think it will make me sound more intelligent. And I will have to split it into two. I recently read a novel called True Biz that it is just like about the hearing and deaf world and how they collide and about a deaf girl who moves into a deaf boarding school and just this parallel between being able to hear, not being able to hear, kind of her world at the school, outside of the school. And it was incredible and recommended to anybody. And the other one is 4,000 Weeks. About time management. It's a 4,000 weeks time management for mortals. And it is really just like, I mean, talk about being like type A and trying to like figure out your life and live and die by your inbox and calendar, and would recommend it to anyone.
Nice, nice. We'll be sure to get those links in the show notes. And then final question here, how can people follow you, you know, keep up to date with yourself and what you guys are working on at LH?
Yeah, I think this may sound very cliche, but our Twitter, and that is something I tell people, you know, I think that really is where a lot of tech and VC stuff is happening, where you learn about things, whether it's job openings, whether it's funds announcements. So definitely follow me. I'm Lair Hippo. And then Lair Hippo, we have a wonderful newsletter, bi-weekly newsletter that our director of marketing, Emily, writes, and would definitely encourage anyone to subscribe to that, to keep up with us, tech trends, New York news, things like that.
Awesome. Love it. Stephanie, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. I think this has been an awesome episode. Really, really excited to get this one out.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe to our newsletter for more venture capital research by visiting goingvc.com. And consider giving us a gift by rating us and sharing the podcast with a friend.